irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, yes you are.
Yes you are.
Yes you are. The room collectively just got so much more attractive.
The room
it was this
alive.
Magical energy just came in. Because it was pretty dodgy up until about 30 seconds ago.
No, this is a good looking group. I think I want a photo with y'all.
Oh, yeah, it's too bad they can't see your dress.
It is far better.
But we'll get a picture and we'll make sure they do.
That is a lovely dress.
Beautiful.
Michael, they don't even know who we're talking to
I'm
yet.
I'm talking about your dress.
My dress. Yeah. Well, you know. It's
different
hard,
show.
It's hard to wear the low-cut thing past 50, but I think I pull it off.
You do.
You know? So as long as I do the manscaping. I tell you, when you're Italian and you pass 50, it's like overnight you're a chia pet. It's just like, you know, you go from seal to chia pet. It's more than people care
about. I think you
know.
Have to be 50 to know what a chia, over 50 to know what a chia pet is.
Yes, true. That's very true. And I still want to do my tattoo idea. Did I tell you about my
no,
tattoo idea
not.
For my back?
No.
I want to do a tattoo on my back of my height at different ages.
Oh.
That'd be just a great idea. Like Paul at 30. And then it'll go back down as I get older, as we collapse.
Let's if you have hair on your back, then that could be a chia pet.
I'm Italian, unfortunately. I do, yeah. Putting suntan lotion on me is like trying to get peanut butter out of a shag rug. Okay.
Boy.
They just keep coming.
There's an image to take
we
home
have
with
lost,
you. Huh?
Lost control. I think we had
I think Sharon's gonna vomit. I think I just skeeved,
from the play.
I skeeved her out. Is it?
Well, it does.
Have to say the word vomit.
I have to say the word. There's no visual involved.
Okay.
I promise.
Okay.
No. I promise.
Michael, let's thank our
Unfortunately, the visual involved that you've given us will never leave.
burned on the cerebellum.
All right.
We'd like to thank our sponsor. I'll kick it off. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
Award-winning playwright Bathsheba Dorans, am I saying that correctly?
Yes.
Dorans' heartfelt new work, The Mystery of Love and Sex, opened this past Sunday at Center Theatre Group's Mark Taper Forum. Performances continue through March 20th. I'm hoping to see it next week. Michael, you are going to go
as
well.
I am.
Directed by Robert Egan, artistic director and producer of the Ojai Playwrights Conference. The production features both of our guests today. About the play, Charles Isherwood from the New York Times had this to say. The play is so packed with humanity that it seems infinitely larger, like a chart depicting the sexual and emotional anatomy of us all.
Wow. Insightful and compassionate. The Mystery of Love and Sex is the story of four people whose lives are inextricably intertwined. Charlotte and Johnny are two college students who have been friends since they were 9 years old. Attending college together, they contemplate taking their relationship to a romantic level. But Charlotte's parents don't take the news very well, and an onslaught of uncomfortable truths about all four of them is unleashed. As mentioned today, we are joined by two of the stars of this acclaimed production. Please welcome Sharon Lawrence and David Pitou.
There you go.
Hello.
What a lovely audience.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Well, they do what they're told.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
It is a pleasure to have both of you here today. Very excited to talk about this production, and as well as you, Phyllis, who is not mic'd, but we're grateful for all that she does.
Phyllis Moberly.
She's waving frantically, and we're grateful for what they all do for us over at the Center Theater Group.
The best.
But before we get to that, Michael, how was your week?
You
lead a far more exciting life than I do.
Oh, really?
So I come here to hear what you've done.
Well,
go ahead.
That's not saying much. Well, you know what? Actually, because, you know, I had to miss the show last week because of having sinus issues.
Yes.
Which we get. I've never been affected by these things before, but I guess as we get older, we change. And I think it's the dry weather because it just was,
really?
Just put me down. on last week.
Really?
Yeah.
Because you never miss the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
And I have, and happily, I don't have sinus issues because, you know, looking at me, it would be a big job. Oh, look at the time.
Wow.
Oh, jeez. Are we at that time already?
Oh, my.
So that was your week? Your week was sinus issues? That's
well,
all you got?
You know what? What else can I tell you? I bought a new bedroom set.
You did?
Yeah, how about that?
You did.
You know what I did?
Life on the Edge with Sterling.
It is, actually, because I bought a mattress that is an organic mattress. Have you heard of these?
Of course.
They are amazing. I'm just finding out about it,
it's
right?
It's an organic?
It's an organic
and the, yeah, there's no plastic.
Organic latex. So
is it a gluten-free mattress?
Pardon?
Gluten-free.
It's not as comfortable without the gluten, I can tell you.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is, it's a John Pignette line. He used to say, he goes, I don't even know what gluten is, but apparently it's delicious.
And fluffy. It makes and things
what
fluffy.
Is an organic mattress?
You know, it's simply, the, as Sharon said, it's free of plastics. It's free of all of those kind of
right.
things that
man-made.
It, yes,
right.
that
that's bad flame retardants
are
that are toxic.
Yes,
exactly.
So but, it's comfortable, but you will burst into flame if you
too much friction.
No, oh,
it's going there already, are we?
Set the bar.
I did.
It's a memory.
Peanut butter shag rug sort of set the bar.
There you go. No, it's a memory. A mattress, you know, so
and memory
it
foam is
actually
for Alzheimer's.
Yes.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, yeah. We better move on.
We should, because I got nothing. I got nothing. I got a.
I'm,
you know
I'm
what? I got.
To have
I got a mattress I bought in a store. It's got springs. It's like the mattresses used to be.
Well, chemicals. I have a back thing, too, so that's
but
why I
had a
it.
Futon for years. Yeah. My wife and I had a futon for years. That was huge.
I
you know,
would
and,
love to have seen that. Yeah.
Oh, you need to get out more. Okay. Let's. Why don't you introduce David, and we'll move on, and we'll talk about this production.
I will indeed. Today. Our first guest, ladies and gentlemen, appeared on Broadway in Is He Dead, for which he received a Tony nomination and an Outer Critics Circle nomination, as well as Love Music, which garnered him Tony and Drama Desk nominations, as well as an Outer Critics Circle Award for Best Featured Actor in a Musical. His other credits include Utopia, Never Gonna Dance, and Parade. You will soon see him in an upcoming project with a very promising director named Woody Allen, but right now you can see him on stage in the role of Howard in The Mystery of Love and Sex. Please welcome David Pitou.
Thank you.
Oh. Hey, David. How are you?
Welcome. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. We like to treat you East Coasters, you know, with a little flair.
Yeah, let's start there. Before we get to the actual show, before the play that you're doing, you're a transplanted New Yorker.
Yeah.
You've been here. And was that the deli that Sharon was telling you about, that Langer's is the one you have
did.
To go
she
to?
She drove
Langer's?
Me by that deli, actually.
Yes. Were you talking about Langer's?
Yeah.
Yes.
I showed him the entire
culinary
history.
Drive.
Yes. Culinary drive.
She gave me a little
from
tour.
Our rehearsal space, which is the right next to the Music Center.
Okay.
And then we drove to see a play at the Geffen.
Yeah.
And I took him down.
Rainn Wilson.
I decided not to do the freeway, but to give him the my version of
because that's
LA
a fertile
tour.
Culinary area.
Yes.
You got that. You
and
got
architecture
the,
and all the churches. It's a fascinating part.
And I didn't realize MacArthur Park of the Song was a real place.
It was. And it's melting
and the
in the dark.
Melting,
almost
yeah.
sweet green icing. But what's the great steakhouse that's the
Taylor's
that is too but the, what's the one on 3rd that's the
Pacific Dining
Car.
Yeah you showed me that you told me I had to go
best brunch in the city there. It's the only time I can afford to go is to brunch because the steaks are smaller because otherwise it's like here's your broccoli and a cosigner is what we're gonna need.
<Kinda. laughs> true.
So David the show okay
it is
a provocative title.
It is.
Is it a provocative show? Because a lot of times you can have that sort of tease with the title, and maybe not that you would not tell us it was provocative, but is it provocative in the way that we expect it to be with a title like that?
Absolutely. There's male and female nudity. Neither Sharon nor I have to take on that burden. But
well, we're out of time.
Thank you for coming. No, it's about a lot of things that are very timely now, I think, about you know, gender and sex and all that kind of, you know, organic mattresses.
Can you give a sort of a little synopsis? I mean, we obviously want people to attend it, so we don't want to give too much away, but can you give a little synopsis?
It's pretty simple. It's kind of a portrait of a family, a couple, a married couple who has a daughter who's going through some, you know, life-changing things. She's a college-age daughter, and it spans, I don't know, how much time does it play span? Like 5 years?
5 years, but...
And it's sort of an examination of her relationship with her best friend from childhood and whether that's going to turn out to be a love relationship, while her parents, Sharon and I, are going through our own thing. So it's like a kind of patchwork of different love relationships. And it's funny and it's sort of tender and very well written, beautifully directed. Yeah. Sharon is wonderful.
And well, it's nice of her to hold up that card there. But and also, is another friend of ours who hasn't been on the show, but we've met him through his daughter, Kristen Towers.
We actually have had him on the show, Robert Towers.
Oh yes, Robert has a very key role.
In here, or did we? He was a phoner.
No, we had him here.
Did we?
Yeah.
I don't think I was here that day. Because I wouldn't remember.
Maybe not.
I don't think I was. No, seriously, I think it was when I was in Chicago. Because I would have remembered him, because his work in Benjamin Button
was
so wonderful.
He's such a sweet.
Yes, he plays my father.
Oh, he does?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's a terrific guy.
He's just a lovely man.
Have you met his daughter?
Yes, she was at our opening. She's wonderful. Yeah. I wish I could say more about his part, but that would probably be a spoiler.
Yeah, you can't.
Yeah, we have to keep that a secret.
Yeah, but he's a great guy.
So... Let me ask you something. We established the fact that you're from the East Coast, but you've worked in Los Angeles before.
Yeah, not really too much, though. It's been a long time since I've been out here,
How long is that?
The last thing I did out here was the national tour of Titanic in 1999.
Was that at the Schubert Theater?
No, it was at the Amundsen.
At the Amundsen Theater.
So, but I've never done a play at the Tabor before, and it's a great place to work.
Beautiful space. Perhaps, you know, I don't know if it had gone through its refurbishing when you were here with the Amundsen, but it certainly is a spectacular.
I saw Molly Ringwald in a play there.
Oh, you did?
How I Learned to Drive, yeah.
Well, that's right, of course.
Is that the Paula... Is it
Paula Vogel.
Paula Vogel, yes. Mm-hmm. I was going to say Paula.
Have you ventured across the plaza to the fountain and tried to get through without getting wet?
No,
it's kind of a traditional.
Yeah.
Did you make it?
I intended to get wet. My first job in Los Angeles on stage was understudying Holly Neer in her one-woman show, Fire in the Rain, Singer in the Storm, at the Taper. And... because I had to learn 13 songs and as many monologues, I was certainly working hard. And my final day there, I ran through the fountain just to celebrate it was my first the way that the Taper and I found each other, and I'm very grateful for it. I'm also grateful that I didn't have to go on, because her fans would have been very disappointed.
I was thinking about that, because understudying is so difficult anyway. And then you understudy a one-person show, and then you understudy a one-person show with a name. Mm. It's sort of like that. That's
a pressure.
I needed a baptism to celebrate.
Yeah.
Not cleansing, just to celebrate. Yeah,
to celebrate. Yeah. David, have you ever understudied?
I have once, and that was it. I vowed I would never do it again because of the experience that I had.
Really?
I had to go on. In the middle of the very first understudy rehearsal we were having, the stage manager left, took a phone call, and came back into the room, and then she had a look on her face when she came back in, and I said, "One of us is going on tonight, aren't we?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Is it me?" She said, "Yes." And it was terrifying. I went right to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Immediately. I was so nervous. And I had to go on for a real ensemble type show where it was like, you know, a lot of interaction, things going on. I mean, I had to take the script on stage for part of it. It was terrifying. Yeah. And I vowed I would never do it again.
No, it is. It's
it was
I can't
so
even imagine
scary.
It. I've never done it. But I also have a lot of issues with that. I used to have issues with anxiety and stage fright. Happily, that's gone away for now. I can't imagine it. I can't imagine. Sharon, did you do it at any? Was that the one time you did it, or did you do it subsequently?
No, I don't know if they did that show again. So,
well, I mean,
I
understudying
so.
In general.
No, and I am grateful that I was able to do it in that format, not only because it is simpler when it's not dependent on the timing, the rhythm, right. the relationships, the right. synchronicity,
That's
all
true.
Of the elements alone. You know, right. it's in stage performers. I'm sure your audience will know this, but it's always important to remind people that our job on stage and on screen, but certainly on stage, I think particularly, is to manage to be private in public, mm-hmm. but to manage our nervous system. And I don't mean mm-hmm. just being nervous. I mean the input from all of our senses. Mm-hmm. So when you move from the stage of reading a script like we did for a few days around the table with Bathsheba Duran, who also goes by the name Bash, which I think is so very cool. She was there with us for a while. She's pregnant with her first child, so she did have to get back to New York. But we had that time in that sort of nice incubator. And then you move on to staging something. So that's another level of ratcheting up the input into mm-hmm. your system.
Yeah, right.
And you're in that safe zone of the rehearsal space with the light that looks a certain way and the sound that's a certain way. And then you move into the actual stage space, and that's another whole set of input.
Thing.
So if you do that as an understudy, it's just it's an overload. But the taper knows how to do it right. They give you time on the set with the lights, with costume pieces, so that you don't feel overwhelmed by the things that are any animal has to take in.
Right.
Your environment.
Right. It's because it's at the end of the day, it's ignoring stimulus.
Right.
I mean, for the most,
adjusting it, integrating it.
Right.
And that's the joy of live work, but also the challenge.
Right. Do you both have understudies?
Oh, yes.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually understudying, David.
Yeah.
I didn't tell you.
Oh no.
Yeah.
When did you get that job?
What's that?
When did you get that job? How did you get that job?
Get that job.
No, we have a lovely group of understudies.
And
it's obviously no disrespect to either of you as performers, and having done it, you'll appreciate this. But in very many ways, it's a harder job.
Oh, absolutely.
What you were saying about, you know, the factors that what Sharon was saying, the factors that are within your control, which is learning the role and all that, the stuff that you can do homework, you can prepare. But what you're talking about with not being on the set, not having the things in your hand, I think that's the only way a one-person show would be mm-hmm. a little simpler, because mm-hmm. you're only saddled with...
Right. I'm not responsible for everybody else's timing. And that's a great thing that we, with this particular play. And one of the things that I love working with David on, particularly because his comic experience, he knows how to, and we've talked about this, what it means to be a master at text, whether it's Shakespeare, we were discussing that the other night, mm-hmm. Comedy, how important it is to keep the buoyancy, mm-hmm. to find the stakes, the importance every time you do it. And it's technical. Mm-hmm. It involves understanding how you play your instrument, the quartet that this particular ensemble is, mm-hmm. because it is four actors, how we modulate our vocal quality, what it means to understand where a piece like this has its high notes, mm-hmm. its comic high pitches, but then where it has to dive deeply. And mm-hmm. and David does a turn in Act One that because he's so good and so seasoned, in other hands, that high dive wouldn't work mm-hmm. as masterfully. And you feel the audience follow the emotional dive that we all have to take. And when it's in the hands of somebody like David, who's got such skill, then it lifts everybody up, and more than anybody, the audience, to give them that journey. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things that I love about going to live theater, mm-hmm. and we have really excellent opportunities to see great work here in Los Angeles. And
I'm amazed at the kind of the audience has a real seriousness about them. They really listen.
And our theater in general in Los Angeles has become so much better over the last, 15 years,
right.
of course.
Right.
You know, it used to get a bad rap, and in certain areas it still does, because but when there are productions like this where theater is where the it sounds so trite, but where the play is the thing, and this is what it is. This is a piece of theater. This is not a showcase. This is not some of the theaters where, you know, there's people who are just looking to outshine other people as a springboard to film or television. This is not that. This is theater. And when we get that in Los Angeles and it gets embraced, and it's a tough thing because it is the land of spark film and TV out here. Mm-hmm. So the theater has to really find its own legs, which is why we do this show. I mean, exactly. 90% of the stuff that we promote on this show is live theater, you know, and that's.
And I have to say, coming from New York, I was really surprised by just the whole work ethic at the Taper, at the CTG, whatever. Everybody's really about the work. I thought it was just going to be like, you know. When is cocktail hour, kind of thing.
And you know, the other thing,
what you expect in LA.
The other thing that theater, and our listeners know this from what we've talked about on the show, but I'm about to mention it because I'm going to tell people how to get tickets for this. But the other factor in Los Angeles is you are seeing, like this, Broadway quality theater for literally a fraction of the price. Literally. I mean, looking at this, tickets start at $25 for this show. That's not parking in New York City.
Right.
You know, and this is
it's what it should be.
You are so able to. Theater is more accessible here. I'll say the same thing about Chicago. Theater is more accessible here and in Chicago than New York, simply because you're not completely priced out. It's not always the producer's fault, because I mean, look at what it costs to rent a venue.
Exactly.
In New York City.
Right. So much about real estate.
It's important to acknowledge the incredible support we get from our donors, from the leadership at all these wonderful theaters, at the Geffen, at CTG, at Pasadena Playhouse. They're supporters, they're donors, they're angels, the people who write checks to make sure that this art form is accomplished at a level that we are all proud of. That is a great convergence of the various industries that exist within Los Angeles. Our opera is astounding. Our symphony. We have great, great culture here in this part of the world. And I'm always pleased to meet the people who come on a regular basis, the subscriber audiences. They make me feel good, not only as a performer, but as an audience member. When I go and I see that community that I'm part of, because we all are interested in what comes next, how we support the new works. Bob Egan, who's our director on this, is not only runs the Playwrights Project at Ojai, but he was part of the New Works program at the Taper originally. And he's so invested in bringing new voices and to these audiences. But we're also building new audiences, too. Yeah. So if you're a member out there and you're a subscriber, a listener, I just want to thank you from my heart and let you know that being a subscriber makes you feel so much more connected. And you can become a subscriber and a supporter at an easy access, more so than you might think. So check the websites and see what's available.
No, and there are, you said it. I mean, without the supporters, you don't exist. These ticket prices, this is what the market will bear, but this doesn't cover costs. You know, this is what they can get for their tickets, but their shows are far more. Speaking of tickets, let's throw this out there. We'll throw that out there a couple of times before the hour is over. But this is The Mystery of Love and Sex we're talking about, which is at the Mark Taper Forum. And you can get tickets by calling 213-628-2770. 72 or online at centertheatergroup.org. Theater has the R-E spelling, centertheatergroup.org. As we mentioned, tickets from $25 to $85. Unbelievable. And Mark Ticket Forum, like that, Mark Taper Forum. I'm so drunk. It's located at the Music Center, 135 North Grand Avenue in downtown Los Angeles. And we will do that a couple of times before the end of the hour. But right now we have to pay some bills with our arts calendar. Michael, do you mind if I kick this
Please
off?
Please do.
Southern Storytelling at its best. Performing Arts Live says John Posey scores a theatrical touchdown in Father, Son, and Holy Coach. One of our featured events, Go! John Posey, How to Get Away with Murder and Teen Wolf, stars in an all-new revival of his acclaimed comedy about a former small-town football star who attempts to live vicariously through his son. Welcome to Tupelo County, Georgia, where even the local Easter egg hunt takes on legendary Super Bowl proportions. In Father, Son, and Holy Coach, Friday Night Football is the motif that illuminates a father-son journey gone hilariously off the rails. Over the course of 85 minutes, Posey seamlessly portrays over two dozen different characters, the entire town of Tupelo.
It's a very funny but also poignant study of the fragile psyche of an aggressively overprotective father, explains Posey. This man's main reason for living is to prevent his child from experiencing what he perceives to be life's failures. Finally, after years of trying to live up to his father's expectations, the son must go on his own way. Posey debuted... I'm sorry, Paul, is that the correct word? Posey debuted father?
Yes,
oh, I'm sorry.
He debuted the show.
Yeah, I read it incorrectly, sorry. Posey debuted Father, Son, and Holy Coach to rave reviews in 1993 and has since toured it all around the country with the screen adaptation recently set up at Salt Entertainment Group. Father, Son, and Holy Coach continues through March 20th in a guest production at the Odyssey Theater. Performances are Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. For more information, go to holycoach.net or simply call 323-960-7724.
That sounds, we have a whole one-person show theme going here today. We were talking about it in this, but this looked very intriguing to me.
Yeah,
it didn't look like something that was right off, like something that we've seen before.
Yeah.
Michael, would you give the lovely lady to my right the intro she was denied at the start of the show?
That she didn't give you a chance to make?
Because we got too silly, and we started talking about chia pets. So
our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, is known for her Emmy-nominated and Screen Actors Guild Award-winning portrayal of ADA Sylvia Costas Sipowicz. Am I saying that correctly?
Did
I get it right?
Perfect.
Oh,
yes.
Good. In NYPD Blue, as well as roles on Desperate Housewives, Grey's Anatomy, for which she earned her fourth Emmy nod, Monk, Law and Order, SVU, Rizzoli and Isles, Lady Man, and Alfred Molina, and Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David. Recent work includes Blunt Talk with Sir Patrick Stewart and an arc on NBC's upcoming series Game of Silence. An accomplished stage actress, she has played 20 different women in the Coward Cabaret, Noel. At the Wallace Annenberg.
At the Pasadena Playhouse, she starred in Noel Coward's final play, A Song of Twilight, and as Vivian Lee in Orson's Shadow, Ovation nomination, and a winner of the LA Drama Critics Circle Award. We have big award winners here today. It's a big award day. At the Taper, she originated the role of Maureen in Teresa Rebeck's Poor Behavior and was featured in the Carl Reiner Gala Enter Laughing. Broadway credits include Cabaret, Fiddler on the Roof, and Velma Kelly in Chicago. Please welcome, so delighted to have her, Sharon Lawrence.
Hello again.
Well, we're out of time, but it's been great.
It's rare to get that whole resume read out, so I'm fine to leave now because it's.
Thank you so much. And with both of you finding the time to come in, and when you're in a four-hander, you're doing shows every night, we really appreciate you taking the time to come and talk.
And you know, it's really nice too what you just read about, Sharon, and of course David has the same experiences. You're not only wonderful stage actors, but you're also musical theater actors.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
We sing a lot backstage.
Yeah.
All four of us. Mae Whitman, our star that you all will know from Parenthood and
Arrested Development.
The Duff and Arrested Development. She's so charming. And York Walker, who is a young... I guess he's new to L.A. He doesn't live here. That's right.
He
lives in New
he
York.
Went to ACT.
He's a graduate of ACT's theater program. And he's a wonderful singer. And all through the warm-up period,
there's a lot of wailing going on.
So much music. It's really lovely to have that energy coming out. And the other night, they were singing something from one of the new musicals. Or maybe it was a Disney film.
Under the Sea.
Under the Sea, right. But I turned to him and I said, We need to do our generation.
Yeah.
We started so we to sing a chorus, chorus line.
Exactly.
And they actually did, they were more familiar with it than I was expecting them to be, which made me feel good.
Nice.
Well, that's one of the reasons I'm so, speaking of the age gap and all that, one of the reasons I think that I'm so happy about how Hamilton is being embraced, mm-hmm. because it's like we need to get those younger people into the theater because the median, you know, right. especially with musicals, the median age of a ticket buyer is way up there.
And I thought its appearance on the Grammy Awards, and of course the award that it won, was saying a lot, you know, sure. for especially with that audience seeing something that's coming from a Broadway stage.
No.
Right? It's no. going to sell a lot of tickets, I think, probably. Just and after that, I mean, it's the hardest ticket to get now.
Of course. And it will incubate more opportunities for that creative team. But that creative team is very unique.
Oh, know? Yeah.
In the
you
Heights.
You don't find just, it's it was the mind
and,
like that.
Yeah, but. And it's so positive because of what's going on with the Oscars, too, and all of this right.
yes.
diversity
coming up
stuff.
On Sunday.
Because when the Tony Awards yeah. happen in the spring, it's not going to be you know, an all-white show at all.
Right.
So that'll be exciting. Right.
So how do you compare, or can you compare, what your likes are with regard to the type of show you're in right now, which is a comedy drama, and also musical theater that you've done in your career? Does it, what takes, what's your pleasure, I guess? What's the greatest pleasure?
Gee, you mean drama versus musicals versus comedy?
Yeah, or does it, or is it not? Not
I
that
think
at
when
all,
the writing is good, yeah. it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I really do. I don't know. You just kind of when there's something underneath you that's really, you know, a good foundation. It just you write it. You know.
Well,
you
I
just,
mean, because both of you did two amazing shows. I mean, Parade, mm-hmm. Jason Robert Brown's Parade,
yeah.
and Cabaret, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So what an experience that must have been for you.
Absolutely. I think for me, the variety is what I thrive on. If I was limited, that would be frustrating because I never felt that I had to choose. As I was growing up, all storytelling appealed to me.
Mm-hmm.
And if, as an audience member, I wouldn't want a diet of just one thing
mm-hmm. right.
or the other.
Right.
And that's why I feel, I mean, I do commit to doing a play every year. I wish that they would involve musicals more frequently, but I do get to sing here in Los Angeles because what Steven Weber calls the disease benefit circuit. He's
oh,
so
geez.
Funny. It's about doing benefits.
Yeah, yeah,
he's
yeah.
just, that's him. That's Steven Weber for you.
Yeah.
But it is.
I'm doing the disease benefit circuit.
It is a privilege to perform with these high-level people and high-level productions that are one-night-only events that do raise awareness and funds for causes that I certainly believe in, whether it's the Night at Sardi's or What a Pair or But to as David said, writing is what's key. And as I get, you know, more experience as the years go by, I'm grateful for characters that are written that are in sync with where I am mm-hmm. emotionally too. Mm-hmm. That's
yeah.
very valuable. Something that I think audiences will love about this play, because whether you have been a parent, whether you, I mean, we've all had a childhood. We haven't necessarily been parents, but this play speaks to all these generational questions,
right.
what it means to be finding yourself at every age, at your third act, at your first act, mm-hmm. at your second act. It's about race. It is about culture. It's about the culture clashes. And it is also about hope and what it means to connect. And when you have that type of story to tell, we can pull from something that's deep within us. That not every story we get to tell does that, but this one does.
Yeah, and it really examines the commitments you make to other people, you know,
mm-hmm.
and how those commitments can change and the storms that, you know, you weather.
Right, right.
And it's
something that all of us can identify with, I
yeah.
think, right?
Yeah, very much.
Let's say you having personally you're not having a great day. And you have to go to the theater and do a show. Do you have a particular way of shaking that off?
Is there a ritual? Is there any sort of?
I've always found that just the getting there and doing it. It's like you know, mm-hmm. some people call it Dr. Footlights. I mean, I believe
yeah.
in that. You just kind of leave yourself at the door,
Me
and
too.
Yeah, you go get into that special cosmic place.
Right.
And you have no choice but to just get over yourself. And
get on the ice.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that expression, leave yourself at the door.
Oh. I used to always go very... When I was having a bad day, especially when I was on tour, I would get there. I was able to get there ridiculously early, and being and it just was a real sort of slow sort of like dissipation.
I think it's harder when you're doing a musical if you're having a bad day, because your musicals really demand good health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, because
absolutely.
you're just operating from such a high level.
I remember I've said this before, but it was stark for me. My warm up when I was 25 doing cabaret was. Roll my neck, do a deep plié, take a puff off a cigarette like everybody did who smoked in the chorus back then, and out on the stage. Then, 20 years later, certainly no cigarettes, but I would have to eat a little bit of tuna fish at 5:30.
Right.
Yeah. I'd have to get to the, theater to plié properly and deeply and for a half an hour.
Yeah.
And eventually, you know, with the show, because it's demanding. It's Velvet Chicago. You're climbing ladders. Yeah. You're swinging, you know, 15-pound chairs around, wooden chairs around. And you're... You know, you are responsible for your Roxy's health as much as you are your own, because it's such a duet. And I would have to warm down.
Yeah.
Too.
Oh, yeah.
So the idea of doing a musical when you're very young is different as you get older.
Yeah.
But then, of course, in a play like this, the wisdom that we have to draw on is part of what allows me to live so fully in the moment that I'm not feeling like I'm having to pull in so far something that's away from me that I'm having to
The layers
to
are there.
Or,
it's just a matter of accessing them.
Mm-hmm.
My friend was a production manager on the road with the Rolling Stones for years, and he was saying that Jagger would be on a treadmill at a full gallop, like 6 miles an hour, for an hour before he went on to the stage.
God bless
him. Just to get that energy up. And this is a man who is now over 70.
Yes.
And just, and of course, has 28-inch waist. You know, just it looks like, you know, it just, but it just talking about, you know, people think that. You know, what they see is just springs from the earth fully born. And there's so much that happens.
No, it's an athletic endeavor. And the other great thing about doing a play is that you find the biorhythm becomes more ingrained as you run the show.
Sure.
And that's a really tough challenge with screen work, because you never know when you have to peak.
Right.
You don't know. Your chemicals aren't all going to be coalescing at that time so you can count on them.
Especially when you're sitting for 8 hours before you walk in front of a camera.
No, it's much more artificial. Because you have to hold on to, you know, when you do your coverage and the people say, oh, don't cry, the camera's not on you yet, you know. And then you're like, oh, but I'm playing the scene.
It's one of the things that Mae Whitman is really excited about doing this work for, because it is, for her, a new endeavor. She's got great chops for it, but she's very excited about playing the
discipline of it.
Yes, and the understanding that she can fine-tune something. And if she has an idea, you can apply it to the next rehearsal or next performance. It's not it's not gone forever.
Right, right.
And although at the end of the run, it does disappear into the ether, and that's tough too.
It's not gone forever, but it's not also only done once.
Exactly.
You know,
that's
I mean, people always talk about, you know, one of the questions I'm so tired of hearing people ask, and we don't ask it on the show happily, is, oh, well, what do you like better, you know, the live theater or film or television? And first of all, it's like comparing Chicago pizza to New York pizza. Both good, different reasons.
Right.
But the thing is, one of the things that it will always have, and is what you were alluding to, Sharon, is the not only the immediacy of the reaction, the immediacy of the effect that you're having on people, but what I love more than anything about live theater is that what happens in that room will never, ever be replicated.
Right.
Because the audience is just another cast member. Mm-hmm. They're in there, too, and everything gets changed and everything gets flavored by that. And that's why I get nervous seeing shows. when I sit in the audience, and because I know, because I've been backstage 10 minutes, you know, at 10 minutes, mm-hmm. and I get nervous. I get not nervous, but excited, mm-hmm. not just because of the show, but because I feel for the people that are up there, and especially things like this, four-handers and things like that, where it's just, it sounds like it's a bit of a ping pong match.
It is.
Yeah, that's absolutely. Actually yeah. really true.
Is, yeah, doubles tennis, and yeah. it's a communion with each other, with our wonderful designers. We have some yep. of the most talented people working in theater are designers on this show. Our lighting designer, Rui Rita, has done, if you just look at his bio, he's been everywhere, certainly Broadway and off-Broadway, but at Williamstown, at Oregon Shakes, at, mm-hmm. at Huntington Guthrie. These are, you know, the highest level of regional and Broadway talents that we have. Carl Lindenberg, the beautiful score that he's created, that's
gorgeous.
That interlude music.
Wow.
We part of the set design that Tak Kata has done, we are moving the set pieces around. Mm-hmm. We're responsible for some of them. And I...
Does the union know about that? Are they
yes,
cool?
Yes, we've already. Yes, they're cool with it, and it's beautifully designed by Robert Egan, our director.
Yeah, very fluid.
And I'll find the music in through the day, filtering into my head because it's just part of me now.
Yeah.
And, wow. It's one of the lovely elements about how we indicate the passage of time within mm-hmm. this yeah. 5-year mm-hmm. period. And I'm grateful that their work is so well represented because. We are part of something sacred. When it, I mean, I don't want to sound corny about but it is. It's and the
it
audience can feel it too.
And it's so the way they're. What's interesting is that this doesn't happen a lot on the show because a lot of people don't often point out a lot of the other team members mm-hmm. that it takes to create something like this. And we're grateful that you're doing that. But what's interesting about what they're talking about is that it's piquing the curiosity and whetting the appetite. And we're really not even talking about. Content of the show. Mm-hmm. We're talking about all these artistic elements that have come together that are just, even that is intriguing, just to be able to see that conglomeration.
Chemistry is everything.
Right. Yeah.
When we walked into the rehearsal room the first day, I knew just from the chemistry from the four of us that it was all going to be okay.
Really? Because before Sharon got here, you were saying what a nightmare she
well,
was.
Well, I mean, you know, there's always a deep.
I'm joking, of course.
No. But it's true. It's like sometimes you just walk in and it's like, oh, the director really cast this well, and thank you.
Yeah. And the fashions are really great in it. Laura Bauer, who's married to Chris Bauer, fantastic actor. She's part of the Atlantic Theater Company. So are you, David,
yes.
aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
They live this great, I think this really magical life because they're working in Chicago, which is where she's from, isn't
That's
she?
That's right.
Yeah, right.
That's where she's
from. And she does film and television, and she actually helped me get dressed for the SAG Awards, too. It was
really?
Very wonderful.
Sweet.
Yeah. She
she's
found this
wonderful.
Fantastic. Yeah, she is great. And she's given us things to hang on us that make us feel like the character. And
right.
May wore this really fun pair of leggings into rehearsal one day. May's this super uber cool, lovely, contemporary representation of what it's like to be a 23-year-old girl right now. And Bob Egan said, I like those tights. Those are good. And she said, yeah, me too. And they've decided that's part of her costume. Mm-hmm. They just pulled right from them because Laura saw the wisdom and the value in it.
And what a skill is it to just see that, to implement it, to just go, okay, you know, it's like comedians looking at the world and being able to just hold that little funhouse mirror to it.
Right.
It's like someone just
the
picks
details.
Up on it. That'll work, you know. We should tell people how to get tickets again, Michael.
Absolutely.
Do that?
And, of course, we are speaking of The Mystery of Love and Sex, which had its world premiere, by the way, at Lincoln Center in
And
April.
This is the West Coast premiere,
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. That was hit back in 2015, but tickets for The Mystery of Love and Sex here at the Mark Taper Forum are available by calling 213-628-2772 or online at centertheatergroup.org. And as Paul said earlier, what a steal. Tickets for this show can be purchased from as low as $25 up to a higher price ticket. you know, check with the box office. You can do that by calling the number we just gave you, 213-628-2772. You can go to the box office if you happen to be downtown Los Angeles and buy it in person.
Yeah. Right? Save yourself some fees.
Absolutely.
And you know what? I want to also, because we've been talking about a lot of people, and if you have this at the ready, the understudies that we mentioned, the hardest working people, are they there?
Or? Yes, they are. They are. We've got Elise Mitro. She's understudying the role that I play, Lucinda, and she's certainly done off-Broadway work. But here in L.A., you might know her from Conviction. She got an Ovation nomination for that. And I think she's part of, Noise Within.
Carrie, the Convictions at out in Ventura?
It says Los Angeles, so
that's a Carrie Krim play.
At the Rubicon? Mm-hmm.
The Rubicon Theater. Yeah, Carrie Krim, a phenomenal playwright who I've worked with before. She wrote that, and Sarah Paulson did the role in New York, the Bay Street Theater. Yeah, right. Carrie Krim, phenomenal playwright.
David Pevsner, who I toured in Fiddler with.
David
Pevsner, right? He's understudying David
for years.
Hannah Tamminen, she's been at La Jolla and the Falcon. And she covers for May's role. And let's see, she went to, she got her MFA at UC San Diego. And then Damone Williams, who is, I guess he's based here. He's done some off-Broadway stuff. Let's see, you can find him downtown LA. Yeah, he trained at Atlantic Theater Company.
And Steppenwolf.
Right.
Oh,
wow. Good people. Good people. Well, thank you so much for that. I don't mean to put you on the spot with that, but we were talking about them, and I thought, why don't we call them out, as it were? It's that time.
It is that time, and Sharon doesn't know what that
Sharon
time
doesn't
is,
know what that time is. We're going to tell you what that time is. At the end of every show, we had about 5 minutes left, we always like to ask our performers who join us to share an onstage tale of woe, something that went wrong, something that went south, either embarrassing or funny or ideally both. So normally we tell people about it before the show, but we didn't get a chance to tell you. But so we're asking David. But David, if you're still
I did think it popped into my head now when you said tale of woe. It wasn't really personally mine, but when we were doing The Coast of Utopia, Richard Easton, the wonderful actor, Tony-winning actor, he made an exit. I forget which Coast of Utopia was in three parts. I don't remember which part it was, but he. He made an exit, and I think his last line in the scene was something like, "That's all I have to say," or something. And then he walked off and fell over. And basically, we thought he dropped dead.
Oh,
and it was Martha Plimpton and Ethan Hawke immediately came out from the wings and said, "Is there a doctor in the house?" And all these doctors rushed the stage. And I think he, in fact, sort of died for a minute.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it was really scary. We had to stop the show. We obviously, that was it. We all went home. He went to the hospital, and he ended up being fine, but they did say that if he had been home alone when that had happened, he probably wouldn't have made it. Wow. So that was real drama.
Yeah,
that was terrifying.
That beats my rat story.
No, I don't think it does. That's
If we have time, I'll share the rat story.
I would say that was the most kind of, oh my God, moment I've ever had in the theater.
Yeah,
I would
that's
think
jarring.
So. Yeah.
Do you have one for us, Sharon?
Well, my castmates in Cabaret, I was the kiss girl in Cabaret, and I kept running into a little pedestal that Joel Grey stood on Broadway for the If You Could See Through My Eyes, when he's in the gorilla suit. The guy who's in the gorilla suit stands on his little platform, and I kept running into it, dancing backwards in one of the fabulous Ron Field choreographic moves. And I decided I was going to angle it just a little bit because I was tired of running into it. Backwards, and I danced backwards off the stage of the Imperial Theater and landed just in the little tiny space between where the orchestra pit angles in and that far, far, far stage right audience left front row seat. And everybody's head was down. The dancers, that's what the ensemble move required, and they looked up and I was gone. And I landed, thank goodness I was okay, but I did have to run up the aisle in my Kit Kat Girl costume, which included a kimono robe and a garter belt and lipstick smeared across my face and my red wig, and it was a matinee, and I burst out the side door onto 45th Street and ran up the street to the stage door because I had to get back in time
finish
the number with Joel Gray.
Oh my
That scared people. They thought that I was injured. I was okay. I did get a little whiplash, but that one for me wasn't as scary as the bat story. I was playing Marion in The Music Man at the Jenny Wiley Summer Music Theater, and my Harold Hill and I were singing on the footbridge, which was a little adjacent to the rest of the stage, and his eyes were like this, and I wasn't sure why. I turned, I have to sort of back up into him as we sing those beautiful lines out to the audience, and my head started jerking back, and I was not sure what was going on, but he was suddenly gone, and I realized a bat had gotten caught in my hat.
Oh my God. Isn't that a Dr. Seuss book?
A bat in my hat. Yes. It released itself, so... That was scarier to me than falling off the stage.
Wow.
I will not do it on a stage.
I
will not do it in a rage. I will not. In 30 seconds or less, I think I can do it. The worst one we've heard, 250-plus shows now, Michael, 5-plus years.
Yeah.
Person's doing a show in a little grungy storefront theater in Chicago and goes out on stage at a theme park costume, one of those inflatable theme park costumes. Can't inflate it when he's backstage. Has to get out right by the door because he can't fit through. Gets there, plugs it in, inflates it. He walks out on stage, and only then does he realize that there's a live rat in the costume with him.
Rats and bats.
God, if you could have seen what I just did.
I know. Gosh,
rats and bats.
Yeah.
Well, our show has none of that.
No
rats and bats.
No rats, no bats.
No rats and bats.
And we have
love and sex.
And we have sex.
The mystery of rats and bats. No.
It is on stage March 20th at the Mark Taper Forum, part of the Center
Theater
Group.
We're on all the social media sites, too,
Make a point of putting that remote down, as I say often on this show.
Yes.
And get away from your television set.
That's right.
And go
Donald
to
Trump.
See live theater.
Thank you both so much. What a pleasure
thank
having
you,
here.
Thank you so
much. Center Theater Group
thank
for
you,
presenting
fellas.
Such wonderful work that we're anxious to see ourselves, and we will see you all next week.
You bet. See you on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohleaf right here on LA Talk Radio.